Welcome to the Healthy Pregnancy Revolution. My name is Stephanie Wilson. I'm your host here today with Dr. Elizabeth Sharavati. She is a naturopathic doctor, perinatal and pediatrics wellness expert, and feminine leadership mentor. She is the creator of the Well-Conceived Fertility Method, an evidence-based program helping women and couples to enhance their fertility, empower their journey, and enrich the health of their future children. She is also the founder of FemPowered Global, a community that inspires women globally to embrace their feminine power and create their own definitions of having it all. Dr. Liz is a graduate of the University of Guelph and the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine. She is an advocate for the potential of naturopathic and integrative perinatal care through what she calls the five trimesters, preconception, pregnancy, and postpartum, to powerfully influence children's and families' future health. Dr. Liz founded Two Rivers Health, an award-winning integrative fertility and family care clinic in the heart of Guelph, Ontario, with a vision for investing in the health and well-being of today's and tomorrow's generations. The clinic now serves clients internationally through telecare, online education, and private coaching. Her first book, IVF Meal Plan, invites women and couples to discover the power of food to nourish their fertility success. Hi, welcome, Dr. Liz.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie.
Absolutely. So let's just jump right into it. You know what? Actually, we were chatting beforehand and we were discussing this period that you consider preconception that you and I both agree is just such a beautiful time in a woman's life that could really change generations, could really change the world if we embrace this. How would you elaborate on what that is?
Yes, I share your passion for preconception. And so, as you mentioned, it's a season before getting pregnant where, you know, both partners ideally are putting some conscious effort or changes and implementing self-care and healthcare and optimizing their well-being in advance of conception. Why? Because it actually takes 3 months to fully mature and ready for, get eggs ready for ovulation, or in the case of IVF, in vitro fertilization, to be retrieved for a cycle. And similarly in men, it takes about 3 months to mature sperm from their primordial version, which is it's a round cell, doesn't even have a tail, to a healthy sperm cell that can actually fertilize successfully an egg. So we have this season, preconception season. And, you know, I just kind of discovered it or became familiar with it when through my training in acupuncture at the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine. And in that traditional Chinese medicine theory or way of approaching health and well-being, it was standard for each party, each member of the couple to invest in their health for about 3 months before getting pregnant, because it was seen that this is how to give their future child and subsequent generations the very best, highest possible health inheritance, because it's 50% of the DNA, is carried in the egg, and 50% of the DNA is in the sperm that will create your child's blueprint, their health blueprint for their entire life. And so there's lots that we can do on top of the genetics themselves, but going into preconception with the highest possible health will mean that the eggs are of the highest quality, which means that the chromosomes are and the DNA is of the highest integrity and the same inside the sperm cell. Less breakages, less damage, so that there is the greatest possible expression of like our best genes. So our genes can all express differently, meaning influences from the environment, such as nutrients or toxins or stressors or traumas. They influence our genetic expression without even changing our genetic code. And so that's where we're talking about epigenetics. Now, of course, epigenetics is relatively new science, and it's everything that influences the expression of our genetic code without changing the genome itself. So my example that I have in my book is you know, when you haven't seen a friend for a long time, and maybe she's gotten out of a bad relationship, or she's gone on vacation, or she's changed careers and she's doing really well. You say, gosh, you look 10 years younger. And is she 10 years younger? Of course not. But she's vibrant and she looks younger. She looks healthier. So this idea of growing healthier, more vibrant, more energized, even as we chronologically age, the reason why that's possible and happens to, we've all observed this either in ourselves or someone else, mm-hmm. The reason that happens is that our bodies are literally designed to heal and self-repair. And our bodies are going to receive these inputs from our environment, which includes our food, which includes, you know, our social interactions, which includes our exposure to different toxins and so on. And our bodies are going to respond to that. And another thing that our bodies are really responding to is our thoughts and our beliefs. So all of that to say, you can have tremendous impact on your baby's future health by devoting this sort of preconception preparation season. And, you know, you wouldn't go into like a marathon, or a professional athlete wouldn't go into the next season of, you know, of their sport without a preparation season. That every single professional athlete has a training season. And what could be more important than preparing ourselves for the healthiest possible outcome in our children? There's no more loving, I think, way to receive that child than, you know, to have this, to invite this in, you know, and when it becomes available to you, to invite it in. And so that's kind of the philosophy that I have to preconception. And I remember really being struck by this thought that in traditional Chinese medicine, a child is considered to be 1 year of age on the day she's born. She's one, because inherently there's the 9 months of pregnancy, but it was just assumed that there are 3 months at least of preparation. And of course, hundreds of years ago, DNA and epigenetics weren't recognized. It was based on observation of real life, right? And I think everyone would agree, the healthier the parents, the healthier the baby, and the easier you'll get pregnant too. But now we understand that there's a real scientific measurable basis for it. And that's, you know, partnering the energetic and like the philosophy and the love behind it with that science is really exciting, because it enables us to give some really concrete steps to women or couples during that phase on what pieces of preconception health or self-care or wellness would be the most valuable for them. Mm-hmm. So it ends up being very empowering for people. And I, you know, I think for myself too, I'll share that, and like going into my a pregnancy, when I got pregnant, I was 39. So I gave birth at age 40, and I went into that pregnancy the healthiest that I've ever been. And it gave me so much confidence, mm-hmm. just as a mother, as a woman, as a person, even interacting with, you know, all the things that can feel a little bit intimidating when you're pregnant, all the, like the things that they want to measure and all those things. I felt that connection to confidence. I knew my baby was strong. I knew, you know, I didn't need this and this and this intervention or this and that test. I felt connected to that. And I really see that the way that our like my pregnancy, my birth, our postpartum played out, it reflected that, that I, you know, I was blessed enough to have awareness and to have tools and resources to be able to invest consciously in my own health and well-being, and my husband, his own as well. And I think that we see that in our child every day. And I just want that for everyone. And I just, you can feel the impact of that preconception health, you can feel that that's going to flow into next generations too. Mm-hmm. And so if it's like a legacy. Meanwhile, it also helps couples overcome fertility challenges or not have any fertility challenges at all. So it's win, win, win.
I love the analogies that you're using. And speaking of athletes that are preparing before a game, I've heard it said, I don't know who I would quote on this, but I've heard it said that for many women, going into pregnancy and labor and delivery is the greatest athletic feat of their life. Like, why wouldn't you not train for that as such, you know?
Yes. Yes. And also a quick little, I guess, addition to that is I felt so well going into my pregnancy. And then around 5 or 6 weeks, the nausea started. So I had very severe morning sickness and I wasn't able to move or take in the kind of nutrients that I wanted to. Mm-hmm. And so it was very comforting. I mean, at times I felt upset about it, but most of the time I was comforted because I had pre-invested all of that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, you know, you're going on a sabbatical or a huge trip around the world or something, and you're going to save money and resources in advance of that so that you can kind of sit back and go, and if you hit up to different challenges or different expenses, right, you have something in the bank to cover that. So I felt like, okay, my baby's going to get everything that the baby needs and I will just lay here and survive. Mm-hmm. And then when I was able, you know, around 5 or so months, I was able to do some things and it felt so good. And my body just remembered mm-hmm. how to do it. And so we had, you know, I was on my 40th birthday. I was around 26 weeks pregnant, I think. And we biked 40 kilometers. Wow. And I was a pretty flat trail, but it was wonderful. It just was wonderful. And I felt like, okay, like if I can do that, I can get, like, I'm going to have the birth that I want. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have that natural, intervention-free, just empowered, blissful, right? Endorphin-rich birth. Mm-hmm. And so all of that, then I was able to, you know, strengthen in a way that felt good for me in the months prior to my actual birth. And then I think that helped my postpartum recovery and resilience as well. It is all insulation or like savings in a bank account. It really is valuable. And our culture doesn't teach women it doesn't teach us about this, right? So we have to learn it from each other. And I think there's often a hesitation because a lot of women or moms are worried that if they had a real successful experience, that it's going to diminish or make others feel bad if theirs wasn't like that or if they didn't think of that. And I always just say, like, your eyes are only open to a truth when they're open to them. And once you've seen that truth, it's yours. You never unsee it. So it becomes your repertoire moving forward. And that kind of reminds me of something else we were talking about before our interview, Stephanie, which was around interrupting patterns and leaving certain things behind that no longer serve us. So if there was something that you learned and you were taught or you implemented, it's because you were doing the best you could with all of the information you had. All of us are just doing the best that we can with the resources, information that we have and the support that we have at the time. So if you gain something new, it's for you. It's for you to move forward with. It's not for you to feel guilty. It's not for you to beat yourself up. And because of the beauty and power of epigenetics, you can also do powerful pattern interrupting, even if your child is already walking around and right out and about. And there you can change when you change yourself. When I change my brain, my neurology, my rhythms, my when I do life through the lens of my values, mm-hmm. it can't help but be picked up by those closest to me. It will impact on them. You know, if you think of just something as physical as when two people are in same room together, same space together, their heart rhythms, their biorhythms sync. I'm reminded of when my son was around 18 months. We had still been struggling with sleep and nap patterns and things like that. And we invited a buddy who's the same age, literally he was born the same day. And he was having trouble with naps, but really needed a specific nap time, which happened to be noon. So it took about 2 days, but their naps synced to each other such that one child was in the playpen, one was in the crib in the same room, and they just started looking at each other, quietening down. They would sometimes just start walking upstairs and our nanny would be like, oh, okay, I guess it's time for naps. Or she would prompt them and they would be like, yeah, let's go. And they would just climb into their beds and lay down and they would sleep for 2 or 2.5 hours. Whereas if it's one of them at a time, like I understand from his parents and from our experience, they might sleep for 90 minutes or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought, wow, we're really designed to be together. We're really designed to be around each other. And I think there's a healing quality to it. So when we are well, when we make ourselves just that one step more well than we were a moment ago or yesterday, we can't help it. It's shared with those around us. It's shared with our family, with our children, with our spouse. So just by being who you are, just by, you know, conceiving and birthing of that highest, healthiest version of you, you are changing the world. You're going to change the world. And if you happen to be in a preconception season, gosh, that's really cool because you can leave behind and just have that clarity, you know, that you've done whatever it has been within your power and control to date to make yourself most ready, the readiest that you could be for this highest calling on the planet, which is to bring new life through and to mother.
Wow. So beautifully said. I love your analogies as well. We want to fill up our savings account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fill up your preconception accounts. Mm-hmm. Because you might be pulling on your overdraft protection when you're in
the court. I love it. So what would you consider is the most important thing that a woman can do before she conceives for a healthy pregnancy, a healthy baby, and a healthy postpartum?
You know, I think it would be powerful to simply know and simply hold in your heart that you're making yourself ready, open, willing, and able to conceive, carry, and birth the healthiest, happiest possible child. Mm-hmm. And then let, you know, through that openness and readiness and willingness, let what comes to you come. Let your eyes just be open. Oh, that's interesting. That idea dropped in, that practitioner or that podcast or that summit dropped in, right? And so we can, when we rely a little bit on our intuition, right? The right tools, people, relationships, opportunities, information comes through. And so, you know, for any of, you know, I can share for my patients the sort of essentials that I might walk them through if they're in that preconception place. It's learn about fertility awareness. Learn about your general health and well-being. Are you nourished? Are there any key vitamin deficiencies that you could have tested in your bloodstream? It's pretty simple. And then address them before you get pregnant. Because like I mentioned before, first of all, by the time you're building a baby, it's taking a lot of nutrients to do that. Mm-hmm. And secondly, 70% of women have some weeks of severe or maybe mild nausea, but they don't get to eat the same way that they would mm-hmm. normally. So it's not like you can snap your fingers and suddenly say, okay, I'm going to get healthy, because you might not be able to exercise or eat or even drink water the same way that you would have liked to before you got pregnant, at least for a few weeks mm-hmm. or more. So those are really valuable things to think of ahead of time. And but I think I think overarching all of that might be just the permission to give some conscious thought or attention to it. Meaning create spaciousness in your life. Let's not be just harried and racing and overscheduled and stressed out by the time that we're trying to conceive. Let's make space to show our system. And, you know, if you believe in anything to do with like energetics or souls, or like, let's make space for that person to arrive here, to land with us, and for it to not feel such a pressure cooker when that happens. Because by the time you're 9 months away from having your baby, it can be a short time because again, your energy is being highly devoted inward to the building of that human. So I think, yeah, just having that open, that permission, like I'm going to give some attention to this, and it's okay. It's good for me to do that. And start cultivating that identity of yourself as a mother, even before you've physically conceived, because it is a process, and it's an important one, and it might be the most important one on the planet, is becoming a mother. And it does start at least 3 months before you conceive.
I couldn't agree more. So how do you believe that nutrition affects a woman's experience of pregnancy, delivery? I know, of course, you've written the book on it for specifically women going through IVF. How would you say that nutrition affects us?
You know, as I cite in my book, so this is referring to IVF, but I think the ideas, the information can apply even to natural conception, and I'll tell you why. But in my book, I cite the statistic that a different pattern of nutrition can affect IVF success by up to 40%. Wow. And we all have to eat anyway. And that 40% was comparing not an unhealthy to a healthy diet pattern. It was comparing a standard healthy Western diet, like whole grains, meats, dairy products, fruits, and to the Mediterranean diet, which is pretty easy and delicious to maintain and enjoy. Right?
Yeah.
And so that, but there are specific differences in there that we think are impacting fertility outcomes, everything from egg quality to sperm health, to the number of embryos and the quality of embryos at IVF, and the not only the pregnancy rate, but the term live birth rate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we want to know, was there a healthy baby born?
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, in the Mediterranean diet, there is more olive oil, so more omega-9 fats are in there, versus vegetable oil, which is omega-6 in the Western diet. There's more fish and seafood and poultry versus red meat and pork. Mm-hmm. And there is mainly fruit for dessert, whereas in Western culture, it's more like cakes and pastries and things like that for dessert. And so those are, and there's plenty of nuts and seeds in the Mediterranean diet as well. And whereas in the standard Western diet, it's more focused on grains like bagels, toast, cereals, you know, those kind of mm-hmm. foods as staples. So I think a relatively easy pattern to adopt, and it's a relatively simple shift, but it can make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
The other oil that the Mediterranean is more rich in is omega-3, which are from those fish and seafood and nuts and seeds.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. Another aspect of it is eggs require so much nutrients and energy relative to other cells. They're the biggest cell of humanity. Mm-hmm. And when they are, so they're suspended in development from the day that we're born as girls, and under hormone signaling, then a little class of them will start to become developed every month. And it takes about 3 months for that process. And during that time, one of them will become the valedictorian and be the one to graduate and be ovulated. And the rest will be broken down by the body. So in that time, though, it's like we're opening up the schedule to like everything that wants to come in. So the eggs will actually build more iron receptors. So they bring more iron into themselves to help them grow healthy, or I should say, like in IVF, there's nutrients that have been correlated with greater IVF success, mm-hmm. like healthier embryos and greater pregnancy rates with higher levels of nutrients such as coenzyme Q10, which is a very key energy producing molecule for inside the cell, inside the mitochondria, the energy producing machinery inside a cell. It's also like an anti-aging opportunity. So the more energy and nutrition that your eggs have, and the less inflammation or toxicity that they're exposed to, the easier it will be for them to implement their very own self-repair mechanisms. So this is getting at this idea of how so many cases of infertility are blamed on the woman's age. Egg quality can change over time. It can improve over time. You can have healthier, better quality eggs next year than you have today if you nourish yourself. Hmm. And I guess I mentioned earlier, there's a reason why so much of the information pertains to IVF. So it's not that this is inapplicable to people who want to conceive naturally. Mm-hmm. It's that in IVF, in the process, we happen to be able to see eggs under the microscope, and we see embryos under the microscope, and you can measure things like the level of coenzyme Q10 inside the follicle fluid, the sac that's holding the eggs. So that's how we know about it. So it's not to say that these ideas wouldn't be valuable mm-hmm. across physiology. It's just that became the window by which we learned about it. Whereas sperm are easier to visualize. So for a while, it just felt like there were a ton more studies on nutrition and supplementation for male fertility and sperm health, only because it's relatively easy to get a sample of those sperm and look at them every 3 or 6 months yeah. and see what's changed.
Wow, that's amazing. I always looked at IVF and conceiving naturally as just two separate categories. I really appreciate that you compared those two and how one is just a visual that we don't get to see with the other.
Yes. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what would you say, woman, is there anything we should be detoxing our bodies from? Of course, detoxes are all the rage. Is there anything that you think we should focus on detoxing prior to even those 3 months?
You know what? I would love it if people detoxed perfumes and plastics mm-hmm. wherever possible. Those two P's are, I talk about the 5 P's in my program. I would say those are the two top ones. Perfumes, because they synthetic fragrances inherently contain a class of compounds called phthalates, which is also starts with a P. It's a silent P, I guess. And it's phthalates. And phthalates have been attributed in one study, they attributed phthalates to be the cause or contributor to 69% of male infertility. 69%.
Wow, that's huge.
So phthalates are found in both synthetic fragrances mm-hmm. and plastics, especially plastics that are like a higher number on that recycling symbol. So more processed plastics like and softer ones. So the plastics that are wrapped around fast food, for example. So as you're changing your nutrition, if you're doing less processed food, you're also going to get less plastic exposure. plastic, so get rid of your plastic water bottle, please. Just use glass, use stainless steel. Don't put your food into plastic. Don't microwave it. Don't eat off plastic plates and forks and spoons and styrofoam. Try not to freeze or heat it. And you just cleanse your kitchen of as much plastic as you can. And then perfumes, like if you love aromas and you love fragrances, choose pure essential oils. They are actually good for you. They're actually medicine. They are the fragrances that plants and trees give off that make us feel good. And they interact with our limbic system and our brain. They have anti-inflammatory properties. They are healing. They're potent, powerful healers, but they're also, many of them are so pleasant. Mm-hmm. They're the original perfume. Like a bottle of pure rose essential oil could be like $300, like 15 mil, right? Mm-hmm. It's so pure and it's so rare. And I think that's why fragrances have evoked this classy, luxurious, wonderful image. But that's all marketing today. Mm-hmm. Right? It's all marketing and packaging, and fragrances are not that exquisite, and they're not expensive to make anymore like they were when you had to, you know, press all these flowers and keep the volatile compounds in some kind of form to hold them in. So all that's to say, put your, you know, instead of buying perfumes, like get scented stuff out of your house and just buy unscented, or you can put your own essential oils that you love in. Like lavender is such a good go-to that I personally love. I pretty much live in it. Like I love it. It's relatively affordable because it's easy to grow lavender in the right conditions, mm-hmm. In various parts of the world. And you can even like put a little bit in your tea or water. You can put it on as instead of a fragrance, you can drop some in your hand soap, unscented hand soap, and so on. So it's, you can still have the pleasurable experience of nice smelling things, but it's completely different to the body. Mm-hmm. And so I've found through, you know, just my own detoxing my own house and life and business, and then working with clients, like there's perfumes in so many things that you hardly realize till you're looking for it. But even like garbage bags, right? Menstrual products. Mm-hmm. Those have no business having perfumes in them. Diapers for kids. What? Those car air fresheners are so toxic. Right. Even the laundry detergent, like I've become sensitive to it because when I lived in Toronto at the naturopathic college for a couple of years, it was a scent free environment because it had the teaching clinic in the building. So it was scent free. So then I became totally unable to tolerate like a department store at a mall, because the scents are so strong, the perfumes. But now I can walk past, you know, a house or something, and I can tell they're doing laundry or there's stuff in the dryer because you can smell it. It's like scenting the air outside. It's mm-hmm. so strong. And so when we inhale that, that's going into, it goes into our lungs, absorbs into our bloodstream from our lungs. Then it has to go to liver and interacts with all these cells. It has an inflammatory and an endocrine disrupting effect. And the last thing we need in optimizing our fertility success and our baby's future health is endocrine disruptors, hormone disrupting chemicals. We want no interaction with those if possible. So getting perfumes and plastics, i.e. like the phthalates and other endocrine disrupting chemicals that are in plastics out of our lives to the greatest extent possible is really helpful. Ultimately, we can't create a completely toxin-free life or body. Even the natural activities of our cells are producing toxins. So the idea is speed up the rate of toxin elimination and decrease the rate of toxin input. So so that you're getting them out faster than they're coming in. So you're greatly reducing your body's burden of these things. And the ways that your body gets them out, the number one thing that I learned in my toxicology undergrad degree is that the body can eliminate virtually any toxin, given that the organs of elimination are healthy and functioning, and those basically those doors and windows are open to let stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, you need to be nourished first and foremost. And ideally, you need to be a little less stressed than what we've adapted to as being acceptable or normal in our day-to-day lives, especially work lives. Because the less stressed.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Are there any specific methods that someone could do to boost those elimination pathways, or?
Well, I think there's tiers to it, but absolutely. So for kind of those three major organs of elimination, liver, kidneys, and skin, the liver is going to benefit from sour flavors and bitter flavors, because it gets that signaling through the nervous system of that from the taste onward, stimulates bile production in the liver, and bile is part of the way to emulsify things that are fat soluble toxins, including hormones and hormone-like compounds. And it partners up with the bowel, because bile ultimately is squeezed into the bowels and becomes part of bowel movements and is removed from the body that way. So we have to have healthy gut function. That's the foundation of everything. So if you're not sure your gut is healthy, you got to work on that. And then fiber and things like probiotics are going to help to make sure that those toxins that your liver has metabolized, gotten into the bile, secreted for, exit from the body, they don't get reabsorbed to a high degree from the gut back into the bloodstream. So fiber grabs hold of them, probiotics help to further metabolize them, so you're actually eliminating them from the body. For kidneys, it's making sure you're adequately hydrated is the number one. So drinking plenty of fluids, making sure your water that you're taking in is actually clean, because tap water in various municipalities doesn't filter out the hundreds of chemicals that could be in it in trace amounts, including pesticides, other people's medications that they've secreted, like petroleum industry like products. So many things can be in basic tap water.
Mm-hmm.
So I filter, we filter all our drinking water and any water that we use for cooking. And then skin, sweating it out is, believe it or not, a simple but effective way to eliminate dozens of toxins, even heavy metals. So heavy metals are another endocrine disrupting and inflammatory, and they cause other problems for fertility and baby's development. But we sweat out metals like mercury, cadmium, arsenic. So get yourself moving enough that you're sweat breaking a sweat, and or saunas and hydrotherapy, like sweating it out in sauna, then cold wash, cold rinse to close up the pores and rinse that stuff away,
mm-hmm.
is really helpful. And it's safe in preconception for women.
Mm-hmm.
Saunas are less so ideal for men during the months of preconception, but men can certainly do whatever they need to do for exercise. But saunas, like sitting in a hot environment, because it can heat up the scrotal tissue, which can damage sperm.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why the male body puts the sperm where it is. Sperm development is slightly outside the body to keep them a bit cooler. So not so much saunas for men, but yes, saunas for women in preconception, and then sweating for all.
So the saunas are great to eliminate through our pores. What are your thoughts on enemas or colonics to support, eliminating the liver and the kidneys? What are your thoughts on that?
I think they have their place. They've been used for, over a century for sure, probably earlier than that, but there's more kind of like records in science in the past 100, 150 years of those. It's not a tool that I frequently use with my patients. But I think they have their place periodically, and it happens to not be my core expertise. However, if there are a number of wonderful clinics and facilities that have that as their main focus, that they do that. So they'd be able to make recommendations depending on where you are, especially on your fertility journey. And I think that could be valuable, especially for people that have indications such as chronic constipation, or if they've had any liver issues or digestive issues in general. But one thing I am curious about, for those who experience the benefits that they do, I'm wondering if it actually can have to do in part with addressing biofilms in the gut.
So yeah, you make a good point. Right?
Biofilms being those layers that bacteria make to insulate themselves basically from the immune system, or indeed from antibiotic medications. And they make these microscopic layers that that the body has trouble getting to in order to clear out. And so I wonder if it's known, but I'm speculating. The idea just came to me as to why that might be valuable. And if so, like, the bacteria and viruses and parasites that are in our gut are interacting with our bodies all the time. They're interacting with our immune system, especially. And so going back to this concept of gut health, you can actually change your fertility with addressing your gut. Getting a good gut feeling about all of it is really, really important. If there's inflammation in, next door, it's going to be kind of permeating or pressing on organs that are local. And then the whole lymphatic system, right? Which is another, it's another aspect of our detoxification that's often overlooked.
Right.
So, in parallel to our arterial circulation, we have lymphatic circulation, which picks up toxins and ultimately gets them out through our urinary system. So if there's lymphatic congestion around one organ, it's close by, it will probably be connected that way too.
Yeah, you make a very good point.
And then we have the vagus nerve, which feeds information from our organs up our spine to our brain. So there's more feedback coming from our internal organs all the time as to how things are doing. Then the brain is sending downstream.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I love about that is it just is another dimension of sort of scientifically, if we need that, explaining intuition, gut feeling, inner knowing, right? Which is a real feminine quality, not just feminine in gender, but it's feminine energy. It's a really overlooked, I think, power that people have to find their unique way through a problem, find their right solutions for them, to find new possibilities that they didn't see before. When things were much more linear, logical.
I love your approach to feminine energy. You mentioned that so many of us, we should try and tap into that mothering instinct, even before conception, in those months before or while we're pregnant. How can a woman do that?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's such a great question. That's a really big conversation. And I'm only one mother to chime in on it. When I've been working on fertility for the past, I think, 12 or 13 years now, I've come to this philosophy that because we're holding these eggs in our bodies and our ovaries, and our systems are interacting with them all the time. And like I said, there's feedback coming from our ovaries to our brain, all the time, continuous signaling. And we also have the life vision or the idea and the love for our future child, even before he or she is conceived. We feel that, when you decide you're ready to get pregnant, you are doing that from a place of love. And because ultimately women are vessels for creation and creativity, I think, conceiving and birthing the best, brightest, boldest, most resilient version of yourself is a service to your health and well-being in your pregnancy, your birth, your pregnancy, but also your motherhood, your role as a mom, and what your child will, how your child will be enriched by you as their mother, and even how that will imprint down through your grandchildren if you're blessed to see them, or maybe even another generation past that if you're blessed to see them. And to me, that's like not an egoic thing. It's like I deeply desire, more deeply than anything, I think, to give them the, like, everything I can, to give them the best possible, to prepare, to help them be prepared for the stressors or obstacles that they will face in their lives even after I'm gone. I want, just in my waking life now, I want to know that I'm doing what I can to give them that. And I think that this is a deep, resounding desire for all humanity. Like, I don't think that I'm alone in thinking it would be great to leave the world a better place. It would be great to have healthy children, grandchildren. It would be great to give them a living legacy. Mm-hmm. And so being the most congruent with who you are, what your desires are, and bringing them through in the right season is an ultimate expression of wellness. And it's how we create a well-conceived baby, life, household, livelihood. And you can start at any moment.
Love that. And speaking on livelihood, could you tell us a little bit more about Femme Empowered?
Sure.
Fempowered. Am I saying that right?
Yes. Fempowered is the community that I have hosted around feminine leadership. And so, so far have worked with women who are entrepreneurs and business owners, and some of them practitioners, but not all of them having usually some kind of wellness focus. But not necessarily, but so far have been focused on wellness more because that's my core experience as well in work. Mm-hmm. But helping them to create their ideal vision and conceive and birth their ideal vision of their work life by reclaiming or coming home to the wisdom that's in their body and rhythms that are congruent with being a woman. You know, we are not the same physiologically every day. Men, and by extension of man's physiology and way of being, there's like a continuous energy setting. It's like on, push through, off, right? And every day.
Mm-hmm.
The cycle, and every day or every couple of days within 1 month, a woman is different.
Mm-hmm.
And so our capacities actually change and become optimal at different phases of our cycle because of our hormones. Mm-hmm. For example, in The Optimized Woman, which is a really cool book if you're curious about the feminine rhythm within work, specifically work or business, she talks about a study that was done in the 70s that looked at delta wave activity in the brain of women in PMS phase of their cycles, premenstrual phase. And the study found that their delta wave activity was enhanced during that phase. So delta wave activity is associated with meditation, like long-term or chronic meditators have greater delta wave activity. So it's associated with intuition, or that almost spiritual level of knowing or guidance or insight. And so the authors concluded that because women's delta waves are higher in their luteal phase, in the PMS phase, that It's probably due to higher progesterone levels, and it is the reason why women are more clumsy during their PMS. And Miranda Gray, this wonderful author, said, well, it's also the reason why you might have a lot more intuitive knowledge coming to, or insight, or a certain type of creativity in that phase that you can apply toward your success in whatever your project is. Hmm. And when I read that, I realized, oh my gosh, I've noticed that my dreams at night have a more clear, intuitive, often like even prophetic quality to them. So as long as I'm sleeping well in that phase, I really tune into the information that is presented to me in my dream, through my dreams, not always, but in my luteal phase, I know that they're more clear, they're more detailed, and they have messages for me that I incorporate as my wisdom, or that I gain insight from. So, I mean, when we have not uncovered the magnitude of capacities and power that women have. In fact, I might suspect that to some extent it served current paradigms to suppress those to some extent.
Whole nother conversation there. Whole nother conversation.
Yes. Right. Because when a woman is in her power, things start to change. But I feel that when a woman is in her power, the world gets better. Her family, her health, their health. It's the financial well-being of the community and so on, the environment. When a woman is her power, that well-being trickles over. Mm. Yeah. So we have to avoid burnout, ladies. We have to avoid getting poured too dry, you know, we can't have a tea party unless we're pouring from a nice full pot. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love it. I feel like I'm wrapped up in a warm, cozy talking to you. Like, I don't know. It feels so good. I love everything that you speak on with Empowered, with women around conception. I mean, it's beautiful the way you've wrapped it all up and the way you're teaching it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for creating a space where these conversations are welcomed, and I really appreciate it, the chance to share it with you, and that it's landed well, and I hope that resonates with your audiences as yep. well. So I would love to share my conception confidence call. So for those women who are ready for a baby and they either want to work on preconception, or they have some known fertility concerns or challenges that they would like some more support with. This is a call that I am happy to extend and invite women to, or women and their partners.
And I will link to that directly below this audio. Mm-hmm. You can click through and it'll take you directly to book with.
Yep.
To book with Dr. Liz. Okay.
That's right.
Awesome. Sounds wonderful. Well, thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you, Stephanie. Be well.